Welcome to the Bioethics Channel, a production of the Center for Practical Bioethics. For more information on the center and its programs, go to www.practicalbioethics.org. That's practicalbioethics.org. A new policy brief aims at balancing sometimes competing concerns, the need to prosecute improper use of prescription pain medications, while at the same time avoiding the unintended consequence of undertreating pain. Joining us on this edition of the Bioethics Channel is Bill Colby, Senior Fellow for Law and Patient Rights at the Center for Practical Bioethics. Hello, Bill.
Hello. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. You are the primary author of this policy brief entitled Balance, Uniformity, and Fairness, Effective Strategies for Law Enforcement for Investigating and Prosecuting the Diversion of Prescription Pain Medications While Protecting Appropriate Medical Practice. A mouthful, but first, if you could, explain the need for this policy brief.
The Balance Pain Policy Initiative grew when national leaders in medicine, law enforcement, bioethics came together in search of exactly what the title of the initiative says, Balanced Pain Policy. And what that means, we have two public interests, not necessarily competing, but that bump up against one another. First is the need to stop the illegal diversion of prescription drugs, which is a big problem in our society and one on which law enforcement is focused. The other problem is the dramatic undertreatment of pain in our society. Not necessarily, as I say, competing interests, but interests that bump up against one another in such a way that we needed to talk about having a policy which would move the agenda forward for both of these important issues. One, stopping diversion, but also making certain that people who need pain medicine have access to that medicine.
The center was among three organizations who led this initiative. The other two, the Federation of State Medical Boards and the National Association of Attorneys General, are organizations representing physicians and law enforcement. How important was it to get their voices to the table on this complicated issue?
Well, FSMB and the Attorney General's Association were, together with us, the three leading leaders of the initiative. But there were many, many groups that were brought to the table, and that's an apt description, because I think that exactly that needed to happen, that the people needed to sit down with one another. And it was not just those groups. We also had, at our last meeting at which this policy brief was largely crafted, we had the DEA, National Association of Drug Diversion Investigators, U.S. attorneys, and we also had, from the medical side, leaders of the major pain medicine societies in the country. So the importance was to have these people sit down in a room together and see that they were all very similar public figures, people interested in making certain that our society functions well, people of earnest goodwill, and all also intent on the same goal, which is that we don't have illegal diversion of drugs, but that we also have access to medicine. So it was vitally important to have those people all together in the room. And I think having them in the room accomplished what we needed.
In the policy brief, you introduced the concept of a chilling effect. Now, explain how, in most law enforcement, this can be useful, but when it comes to treating pain, not so much.
It's long been a part of law enforcement, and the way it works, it makes good sense, because prosecutors cannot stop all crime that's going on in our society. But when they have an area of crime that they know about, they have a prosecution, and it becomes public knowledge, then that prosecution helps chill similar bad conduct. So it's a very useful law enforcement tool and an important law enforcement tool. But nowhere do prosecutors have an issue like they do with the diversion of pain medicine, because when law enforcement is working, for example, on something like child abuse, there's no good side to child abuse. There is no public good. So if word gets out that the local district attorney is focused on child abuse, hopefully that chills that conduct in your society. But with pain medicine, yes, there is diversion that needs to be stopped. But when that news of that kind of law enforcement activity has the effect of causing doctors to be hesitant to treat pain in a necessary and important way, then that's a chilling effect that law enforcement does not want to have, and the medical community certainly does not want to have. So with pain medicines, it's unlike any other area in which law enforcement works, and so the chilling effect is something we talked about a lot and part of the strategy in this policy brief.
Now, the policy brief suggests six strategies for investigating and prosecuting diversion of prescription drugs. Let's concentrate on three of those. First, distinguishing between criminal behavior and medical negligence. I guess the line with that isn't always so clear.
Well, pain medicine is complicated. Much of medicine is obviously complicated, but understanding pain medicine is complicated, and the patient's chronic pain patients, acute pain patients, that's also complicated. So it's a complex area of medicine. What the brief does is try to bring tools to law enforcement when they're aware of a potential diversion case so that they can understand the activity that's going on and sort through when a case may be more appropriate to refer to the medical licensure board or to go a path different than a criminal path. We have a one-page tool within the document, a procedural template is what it's titled, originally put together by the Attorney General of Oklahoma, Drew Edmondson. And that template, in a very sensible way, walks law enforcement through the steps that they would want to walk as they assess the conduct in a potential diversion case. So very useful tool. But again, trying to focus law enforcement on how you navigate these cases and to give them tools so they can do that navigation in a way that doesn't affect appropriate medical practice.
Now, the second strategy, the need to carefully balance any publicity. Here's where the chilling effect can enter into the picture, I guess, right?
Exactly. And it's the double-edged sword that pain medicine has that really no other area that they're investigating has. I think law enforcement, as a general rule, always take care and are careful with publicity. I think that's part of what we lawyers are supposed to do. But what I think the strategies focuses law enforcement on is the idea that in this area, with the double-edged type of chilling effect, that perhaps it's an area for even more care to be used in publicity surrounding an investigation or a case. So we refer to the American Bar Association and the Department of Justice guidelines for speaking to the media, which are very clear. But I think the focus is just to have people thinking about the double-edged effect of the chilling effect. Because even when a prosecution in this area is 100% appropriate for a doctor doing something that's very bad, news of that is still affects doctors who are prescribing pain medicine appropriately. And then when word gets out, as the urban legends develop, that the law enforcement is investigating a doctor and that the investigation's not appropriate, that it's some kind of witch hunt by a law enforcement person who has gone away from his or her mission, then I think that the chilling effect in that case is really not a societal good. It's a negative. So again, the goal is to have law enforcement thinking about strategies for publicity.
A third strategy, access to experts. Here you note in a particular case how law enforcement was alarmed at an individual receiving 16,000 milligrams of morphine a day. Now, that certainly sounds like a lot, and it is, but that was deemed within standard practice for that particular case.
Well, that specific case we talk about in the policy brief, and it was an example that we discussed at the summit meeting of the different groups, a very seasoned investigator who talked about having a case where when he first saw the report with a large dosage of morphine, he thought this was probably inappropriate conduct. as they dug into the medical records, as they got expert opinion, he came to realize that the medical conduct was exactly appropriate. One of the values of morphine as a medicine to treat pain is that it has no dosage ceiling, so that for someone with ongoing pain or pain that has not resolved, they may develop a tolerance to morphine, which requires a higher dosage. So you have to understand how that medicine works and how the prescribing works and what the doctor is doing. Having the expert available, I think, will be a very useful tool for law enforcement. We are developing a stable of national experts that will be available to local law enforcement for what we've called a curbside consult, or just because not every doctor is an expert in pain medicine. It's complicated. So if we can provide a resource to law enforcement to look at a case and to point out questions they might think about as they proceed, I think that will be a useful tool, and that will serve both sides of the balanced pain policy initiative that we're after.
Now, these seem like reasonable, common sense approaches. Why has it been so difficult to get here?
Well, they may seem reasonable and common sense, and I suppose they are, but in any society, when our problems are easy, we solve them and move on. It's happening all the time, every day, outside of here. But many times we deal with problems that are much thornier and more complicated. And this is one, because law enforcement wants to stop diversion. We all want diversion stopped. But pain medicine wants to provide access to patients in pain. We have a horrible problem of undertreatment of pain in this country. We don't want chilling. We don't want publicity from any kind of case to stop that treatment of pain. So it's complicated, and trying to navigate an appropriate path so that both of those public ends are served, it just took the work of a lot of really smart people in a spirit of openness and candor and frankness, talking about the pros and cons of how we reach that endpoint. So I'm glad to hear you think it seems common sense, because it was hard work to get to that point.
Well, I bet it was. Now this policy brief will be distributed nationally. There will be some training programs, I suppose.
We're going to do a variety of training program, a lot of national release. Certainly people, you mentioned the website, people can go to that site to download a copy of the brief. They can write us to gain access to it. But this is the rollout will continue on for some period of time, because the complicated issues, this is one strategy, this brief. It's one way of tackling a complicated social problem. But the issue's not going to go away, so the work will continue.
Ultimately, then, Bill, what would be your hope when it comes to the impact of this policy brief?
That are the people involved with these questions, that we all move closer to the title of the initiative, to a balanced pain policy, where the diversion of prescription drugs, which is a societal problem, where that's addressed, and where the undertreatment of pain, a societal problem, where that's addressed, and both social issues are solved in the best way possible.
Bill Colby, Senior Fellow for Law and Patient Rights at the Center for Practical Bioethics, thanks for being with us.
Appreciate it.
You've been listening to the Bioethics Channel, a production of the Center for Practical Bioethics. For a free copy of Balance, Uniformity, and Fairness, go to the Center's website at www.practicalbioethics.org. I'm your host, Morel LeBoux. See you next time on the Bioethics Channel.